It's a pleasure to speak here, and I'm thankful to organizers for inviting me here. The title of my talk is written here, and with this title I want to say that I am searching for something which I haven't found so far. And in the very end of my talk, the conclusion will be that we so far don't see this freezing transition, but it's an interesting phenomenon to look for. So here are the names of those who participated in the unpublished part of this work, but the talk will include also a big review part, because it incorporates a lot of ideas from different fields. So to begin with, hopefully everybody knows that polyampholite is a polymer chain which includes both positive and negative monomers. So it's not polyelectrolyte, because it has possible cancellation of attractive and repulsive forces. So therefore, the problem incorporates two difficult aspects and two interesting realms of phenomena should be expected. On one side, it's long-range forces, and therefore everything that is discussed in this seminar, including salt, counter-ions, Poisson-Boltzmann, and everything should be here. On the other hand, it is disordered system, because we have the sequence of pluses and minuses, which is there and which is typically disordered. It can be either frozen or annealed. It can be annealed in the case if there is equilibrium with respect to association and dissociation of these monomers, and it can be frozen otherwise. So in case when the sequence is frozen, we can also consider two interesting cases. One of them is random sequence of pluses and minuses, and the other is when sequence is not random, as, for instance, is relevant for biopolymers. So here is just the list of several important names which are important to the story, and those names are here. Prehistory part is Lord Rayleigh, 1882, and Hohlow and Khachaturian, 1982. And the history includes Higgs and Joanny, Hart, Cantor and Kardar, Shachnovich and Gutin, and Dobrynin and Rubinstein. So the main idea of the early works on that subject is spelled out here. The idea is the following. Let us take one polyampholite chain, and let us assume that this polyampholite chain is pretty densely packed in some box. If it is packed, then pluses, positive and negative charges, will try to arrange themselves, and the hypothesis which was made is that freedom which is left to the positive and negative charges by the connection into polymer chain is still sufficient for them to arrange themselves in the style and fashion as normal electrolyte or plasma ions would do, and therefore they do realize screening of each other. It is not a trivial statement, and I will come later to this statement, but that's an assumption, and if that assumption is true, then there is negative contribution to the free energy of this system, which is governed by this formula, and this minus sign here means that this is attractive type contribution to the free energy of the system. Many speakers before me wrote this kind of formula in different notations, and here it is again. What is important to stress here is the reason why it is an attractive interaction, because I will return to this point at the very end of my talk. The reason why it is attractive is, I can explain it by saying that it is sort of a model of prosperity of a free society. In a free society, everybody wants to minimize, to live better, and from the point of view of this physics, to minimize its energy. And therefore, as they are, the particles are all free, they arrange themselves in a better way than average. On average, as Professor Fisher told us, on average we should expect zero for energy, but they do correlate themselves in such a way that it is favorable for everybody, and therefore it's favorable on average. Everybody knows that. What does it lead to in the case of polyamphalite chain? Here is the picture taken from the paper by Dobrynin and Rubinstein, and here is the free energy for such system taken from the same paper, for simplicity using their notations. What is important here is you have these terms: entropic elasticity, normal non-Coulomb interactions taken in virial approximation, and you have this Coulomb repulsion of uncompensated charge, and this bihuculate attraction, which I explained in the previous slide. So the conclusion, I will not analyze that. It was done, and there is no need to do that in the presence of both authors. The conclusion is that the bihuculate attraction leads to formation of the dense globule. It looks like corn indeed, but for me, the only important thing is it has two length scales, length and width. These circles are technicalities of how they think about it. So there are some blobs. It's the size of RD. It's the Bayes-Kleene. Note that there is no sequence in this picture. In this formula, the only thing that is here is excess charge, which is sitting here, and total amount of pluses and minuses, which is sitting here, but no sequence. What happens if there is some sequence? Well, there is another person. Sorry? Well, it's important to include third virial term because, for instance, if there is no excess charge, then, and suppose you are in a poor solvent, then there is nothing to prevent collapse of the sink to the point if there is no third virial term. So there is another person in the audience who will say that, in fact, it is not a sausage. It's Mehran Kardar. It's not a sausage. It's actually a necklace of beads on a string. And the way this elongated structure is formed is dictated by the sequence. And there are works by Cantor and his co-workers who analyze the details, how it happens. You have to choose the piece which is more or less neutral, and this piece collapses to the spherical part, and then you see the piece which is not neutral on average, which has some extra charge, either positive or negative, and this one extends, and so you obtain this kind of structure. So you may think that the interesting features of sequence dependence should be sitting somewhere here. However, if you think further, or read Joanie, for instance, then you realize that if you have a system of finite concentration, and you never have one polymer chain, if you have a system of finite concentration of random chains with random sequences, then there are some with predominantly positive charge and some with predominantly negative charge, and instead of forming either sausage or necklace or any other product which you can compare this elongated object with, they will of course find partners. And therefore, it is only at exponentially low concentration that you can see a single polymer chain, but at exponentially low concentration you can see nothing at all. So therefore, it's unclear how to look for the effects of sequence, for the heteropolymer effects in the case of a single chain, unless you do Monte Carlo simulation as Motohiko Tanaka did recently. I'm sorry, molecular dynamics simulation. Nevertheless, at this moment I would like to explain you what do I mean by freezing transition. Why do I speak about freezing transition? I told you already that what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the effects which are dictated by specifics of the sequence of polyelectrolyte rather than brute effects of net charge and things like that. Which kinds of effects should I expect in heteropolymer in general? The most interesting effect is the heteropolymer freezing transition, and in a very naive way this effect can be described as follows. Imagine that you have a kind of density of states which is written here, and of E, which is the, say, the probability to find microstate of some energy E. And of course you expect that this density of states is low when energy is very low. On the other hand, you have certain exponentially large number of various states, various conformations. So if you compare these two and find energy at which density of states becomes of order 1 over the number of conformations, then you then below this threshold you certainly don't have any states at all. This is very crude estimate, and I can go into big details when it's valid and when it's not valid and so on, but naively we can do the estimate like that. And therefore, if our temperature is so low that our expected energy is sitting somewhere here, we expect that our system will freeze into one or very few preferred conformations which will provide dominant contribution to the partition function. And that is the transition from liquid-like state to a frozen state, like this happens in many disordered systems. Right now I return to the one-chain problem, even though I told you that experimentally it's hardly achievable, but on this level of argument I prefer to return to the one-chain problem. M or N?
M.
M is total number of conformations. So I have polymer chain sitting, for instance, on the lattice to make it discrete. And then it is some exponentially large number where N is just the length of the number of monomers.
In
the
about neutral?
For instance, about neutral at this moment. Yeah, for instance, about neutral and of...
So you're not talking about necklaces?
Oh, no. No, right now I'm speaking about something that is neutral and therefore it should be compact on its own, but to be on the safe side, I may pack it in the box. And then it's indeed completely compact.
But there's no assumption, basically, in what you write down about the number of confirmations. The difficulty is the NAV.
Sure, yeah, of course.
If anyone is unhappy about that, they should just get happy.
No, there is no... The box can affect this omega a little bit, but that's the detail. There are two difficulties. One difficulty is N of E, and the other difficulty is this condition itself. So, if we forget for a second about the difficulty of the applicability of this condition itself, and remember what I said about the bi-Hückel assumption, the model of prosperity of a free society, then we can assume that N of E is nothing but the density of states for usual plasma, for usual electrolyte. Interestingly enough, I don't know the book where this quantity is written down. So the general density of states for the bi-Hückel plasma should be determined like this formula. So it's nothing but the inverse inverse Laplace transform of the partition function. But it's very easy to compute this thing for the bi-Hückel plasma. And the answer is written here. Looks beautiful to me. So the answer is here. The density of states is Gaussian as a function of energy. When energy is high, and then there is the tail when energy is low, and this tail corresponds to much sharper decay of density of states, which is e to minus energy cubed. Normally, for normal plasma, this regime is never seen because this regime corresponds to the situation when screening lens, the bi-screening lens, is larger than the size of the system. But when you have one polymer chain, then this regime may potentially become relevant. And so there are, therefore, two regimes. Here, of course, density of states is strongly suppressed precisely because of the bi-Hückel screening. In order to realize this energy, you have to place your monomers in a correlated way, and there are relatively few configurations which realize this screening. So as we have this density of states, we can now come back to our assumption and compute at which temperature this happens. And if
your question.
Sure.
The monomers, they're kept together only by Coulombic interactions, or there are very important shortening interactions. So it's
well,
a chemical compound, but because you can imagine some limit when these monomers are rigidly troubled, they cannot split, they can only change angles and so on.
Yeah. There are two aspects to this question. One aspect is that even you have an electrolyte, they can associate and form pairs. And that is not in the picture. And I do not speak about that at all. There is the other question, which is these monomers are connected by polymer chains, which is non-Coulomb forces, and that is very important. And that bothers me a lot. But that is deliberately omitted in this picture. So it's the most naive estimate which you can think about. Everything is removed. Everything difficult
but is. When you write down the number of conformations with e to the omega n,
right.
N is the degree of polymerization, and that omega is essentially reflecting the linear connectivity.
Yes, that is true, but
you don't have it in the energetic part, but you have it in the
right
part.
Sure, yeah, of course. But what is important is I threw it away in the density of state part. So in any case, if I still follow this and determine the temperature at which this happens, and also assume that the box which maintains the size of that thing is maintaining dense packing such that the size of the box scales like n to 1/3, then I obtain critical temperature which scales like n to 1/6 until n is small, and then it saturates at certain finite value which is n independent. The fact that it is n independent implies probably that there should be indeed a phase transition of freezing type. However, so I don't know if that conclusion is very bold, or better way, if the argument behind this conclusion is very bold. But that seems to hint that there should be this kind of transition. However, the balance is less than the size of the box. I don't remember. I think it's of the same order of magnitude because it doesn't have n in it. It has only a, omega, and things like that. That's correct, yeah. It's written.
Estimate, you use the divisible calculation for the density of state, which has no randomness whatsoever.
Right. I am back to this point in my next transparency. So let us look. I was about to formulate this question, but I don't have to because Robin did that for me, and so let us look at the simulation in order to see if that random energy model picture is of any relevance to our situation. And here is this picture is produced by Vijay Pandey, and it corresponds to the following. There are 80 randomly generated sequences of pluses and minuses of the length of the sequence is 36, and then those sequences are placed on the cubic, on the piece of cubic lattice, so the 3 by 4 by 3 piece of the cubic lattice, and they are densely packed there. And for each of them, all conformations and all energies of all conformations are computed, and for each sequence, we compute both average energy, which is on this axis, and the variance of energy. And this is done for long-range Coulomb interaction in green and for similar short-range interaction, which is, I'm sorry, long-range is in red and short-range is in green. As you see, the long-range situation and short-range situation is completely different. For short-range, as it should be in random energy model and in similar models, what we have here is we have average energy which slightly varies from sequence to sequence, and then there is a big variance for each sequence which is drawn by this green interval here. And this variance is much larger than the difference from sequence to the difference in average from sequence to sequence. And this is random energy situation. Now what we have here, what we have for long range situation is something opposite, which is we have huge variation from sequence to sequence and relatively narrow distribution of states within the sequence. Therefore, indeed, it is not a random energy model situation, and while there are some arguments which may potentially reconcile these two views, but they are still very inconclusive, and so that's the state of the art of that situation, of that problem. So given that we cannot address the situation with the single chain polymer because we cannot appeal to experiment and we cannot, we don't know how to solve it theoretically, let us look at more complicated subject, which is a gel. And the gel is very much studied experimentally. And here are some new data on that, I think very accurate and interesting data on the gel produced by Takeoka and Tanaka's group. So I apologize for bringing here the chemical formula, but I think in the end it's not much worse than bringing an infinite series over the eigenfunctions. So here is the data of measurements for the gels, which are composed of pluses and minuses in different proportions. So this is pure minus, this is pure plus, and both of them are swollen, as you see. And as you go to the intermediate composition, which is neutral, then you go to the collapsed gel. However, as you see, this collapsed region is very narrow, and moreover, the density here is still far from dense packing. So this difference seems small, but it's relevant, it's important, and it's still not dense gel, it's very soft. You may wonder, is there any way to make it denser? And there are several ways to make it denser. One way is very natural for the person with Russian background, which is to add ethanol to water. And then if you do that, then you do two things in parallel. First of all, you make Coulomb interactions stronger because your epsilon is smaller. Second of all, ethanol is poor solvent with respect to, not very poor, but poorer than water solvent with respect to non-Coulomb interactions. And therefore, you obtain first order phase transition and much denser gel. Another way to make it denser is to incorporate these hydrophobic groups, which make it first order transition in pure water. There are a wealth of data on these kinds of gel, which, for instance, show that there is only limited interval of concentration of alcohol where the transition is first order transition, and in both sides of that interval the transition doesn't exist basically, or it's very smooth. You can follow it in different directions. You can plot it as a function of the basically composition of the solvent, and then you see a wealth of different phenomena, including first order phase transition and including, as you see, the reverse transition here. This is with predominantly positive and this is with predominantly negative monomers. So it's really a wealth of data, and what can we see? What can we do? We can devise for the gel, we can devise a theory which more or less follows the spirit of Dobrynin and Rubinstein's theory for one chain. Namely, we can forget about the details of sequences, of how these pluses and minuses are distributed, and do brute force theory, which is based on minimization of free energy. And free energy consists, schematically speaking, of the following component. It's just too long to write down, and so I write it very schematically. It consists of the entropic elasticity of the supporting polymer network, as done by Flory, for example.
Just one small point. In these gels, there are no cross-links, actually.
There are. Of course, it's real chemical gels. It's completely cross-linked.
Like
it's
the other one.
Right. It's on the large scale, it's a rigid body, solid state. So this is normal Debye-Hückel attraction term, and this is Nipkin's entropy, which incorporates translational entropy of salt ions and so on and so forth, and there are non-Coulomb interactions. And you can do all that, you can go through that, and that is not very exciting. I have much more pictures like that. They are computed based on minimization of that free energy. Using computer, you can plot everything as a function of everything, and that is pretty boring. You may trust that indeed we are able to reproduce all the types of dependencies that are seen in experiment, and therefore this formula captures all essential physics, even though I did not make any attempt to adjust it quantitatively, not because it's impossible, but for the opposite reason. It's trivially possible because we don't know all small-scale parameters. But for instance, here the size of the polymer is shown to undergo either smooth transition or sharp transition depending on phi, which is, roughly speaking, the concentration of alcohol, which changes both the electric constant of the medium and the quality of the salt.
And you reproduce both the upper and lower critical points in the reentrant.
Right, yeah. So yeah, by playing with parameters, we can certainly do that. However, back to the question of how it all depends on the sequence, this successful theory is still brute force theory because it depends basically on crude characteristics such as total charge, average charge, and things like that. Does not depend on the particularities of the sequence. In order to speak about particularities of the sequence, I would like now to choose another way, which is to look at the dependence of the properties of the gel on the way the gel has been prepared. Indeed, if the sequence of monomers is frozen in, it is dictated, it is governed by the preparation procedure, and therefore by looking at the dependence on preparation parameters, we should be able to see something interesting. So here is a very naive cartoon of how it should work. Imagine two limits in the way how the gel can be prepared. One limit is you have prospective monomers, these big pluses and minuses guys, in the box with the large amount of salt added. If the amount of salt is large, then prospective monomers themselves do not contribute very much to the screening, and therefore they are placed randomly in space. On the other hand, if there is no salt at all, then the only guys to screen are they themselves, and therefore they are very much correlated. So let's take this pre-gel solution, and then let's perform polymerization. I don't show salt here, but if we don't see salt, then In this gel, which is prepared out of this solution, we see the positions of charges, which are very strongly correlated. Within the internal geometry of gel itself, if we count coordinates, not along the space, not along the embedding space, but along the chemical connections, then they are strongly correlated here. While here, they are not correlated at all. And therefore, if we do not allow gel, just mechanically, we do not allow gel to elastically respond, to elastically relax, then the density of charge, of internal monomer charge here, will have huge waves. It will be random, while here, the charge neutrality will be maintained over the scale of about the bi-screening length. However, if we now start to equilibrate the gel, for instance, if we try to wash salt away from this gel, it, of course, we will not be able to wash salt from this gel. It will never go from positive ions will not want to be removed from this place. By the way, this kind of system should have very interesting properties as far as conductivity, because it consists of domains where charge carriers are of opposite signs. And therefore, for instance, this place, naively speaking, it's nothing but a p-n junction. Of course, I do not suggest to make a transistor out of this gel right away, but in principle, conductivity properties are very interesting. So it is interesting to understand the properties of these kinds of systems theoretically. What can we do about it? And to this end, we suggest the model, which is drawn here, and which is sort of a Soviet-style idea of screening. Why is it Soviet style? Because I told you from the very beginning that normal Debye-Hückel screening is the model of prosperity of a free society. Now each monomer has its residence permit. It is attached here. And there is some spring or polymer chain which does not allow it to go very far. It wants to participate in screening somewhere else, but it is connected. Its freedom is restricted. Of course, this is very crude model, because it's still very crude model, because normally, if, for instance, this lattice, gray lattice is the gel, then in reality, we should expect that charges are hitting on the subchains of the gel. So therefore, it's not a Gaussian chain, but something more complicated that realizes this restriction of freedom. But still, I think this model captures essential features, which are two. One aspect is these charges are elastically restricted on some underlying metrics. And the other aspect is the pattern of pluses and minuses is governed by the preparation procedure. Okay, great, thank you. So I have 5 minutes to go, and I run to my second to the last transparency. So let us do simple estimates for this model, and this model incorporates two densities of positive charges and densities of negative charges. Better to say, those are densities of residence points of these positive and negative charges. N plus, for instance, of x is the number of positive charges whose tails are grafted or attached around point x. So, in the very simplistic way, we go through normal Debye-Hückel theory, linear one, without any excluded volume complications and so on, so that all is trivial. And the only unusual part is here. So it should be, what should be sitting here is the density. Normally we expect to see here density of positive or negative ions, and instead we have this smoothed density of residence points. So it is smoothed by the operator G, and the kernel of this operator is nothing but the propagator of this polymer chain which connects the guy to its residence point. And delta W is the historically formed complicated notation for the length of this polymer chain. So then, if that is taken, then we write the Poisson equation. By the way, what is interesting about Poisson-Boltzmann equation is the fact that many people think that Poisson and Boltzmann somehow communicated about that. Well, in fact, Poisson died in 1844, while Boltzmann was born in 1849. So, nevertheless, we use this equation, and it's very easy to understand what's going on. First of all, we have the difference here, smooth difference here, which reflects the fact that gel is inhomogeneous. And second of all, instead of normal density or ionic strands, local ionic strands, we obtain this, which is basically the density or including this multiplier, it's an ionic strand, but it's averaged or smoothed over this scale. Now you can go through calculations based on this formula, but the conclusion is simple. The patterns of this n pluses and minuses is governed by the preparation procedure. So we consider preparation procedure as having a normal electrolyte of plasma whose properties, such as dielectric constant and everything else, have this subscript DES, which stands for design. And then for this preparation plasma, we have, again, another Debye-Huckel theory, which is written here, which operates with Debye screening lens under the design condition and everything else. This exponent should be linearized, of course, but I didn't have the place on the transparency to linearize. So if we now remember that we polymerize this pattern of correlated charges, and then we perform affine transformation under this of this pattern, then we obtain those densities. And in the end, energy appears to have this form. It has the normal Debye-Huckel type term, which is negative because they do have certain freedom, even though freedom is restricted. And it's normal volume over Debye volume, except Debye screening lens is potentially can be potentially considered dependent on the coordinate because it has this part which depends on coordinate. More importantly, there is positive term which corresponds to the elastic stretching of this polymer chains and which is proportional to the disbalance of the pluses and minuses because the amount of straight chains is governed by the disbalance, and it is proportional to the Debye length in the preparation conditions, which is reduced or increased by the swelling or collapse factor alpha here. And the delta W is this distance over here. So for instance, this difference is typically is proportional to the square, typically is proportional to the square root of volume of the by volume of design system and so on. So you can go through all these calculations. You can understand that depending on preparation conditions, for instance, on preparation dielectric constant, you can reduce or increase this positive contribution with respect to negative one, and sometimes one wins, sometimes the other wins, and you can make various graphics here. For instance, what is the dependence of the size of the polymer chain on the preparation dielectric constant? If you go to larger dielectric constant, you reduce the role of Coulomb interactions in the preparation system, you reduce correlations there, and therefore you obtain the gel which is more collapsed in the end. And here is the dependence on the other epsilon, which is dielectric constant of final system in which gel lives. And of course, the bigger is the epsilon, the greater is the size of the gel. There is something wrong with this scale because those numbers are certainly wrong. The effect is much more pronounced. Anyways, that is the end of the story. So, as I told you from the very beginning, we did not find the freezing transition, and I don't know where to look for one. But I think there is some indication that we can find something sequence dependent in the properties of the gels. Thank you. That is certainly true, and indeed, if you want to seriously compare situation with the experimental one, then association and dissociation are all important. And for instance, when we do this brute force theory for the gel, we of course there is association and dissociation constants for or pKs for all possible involved ions.
For the one chain problem, you have to be very careful because your monomer at low temperature can form pairs.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be like a bridge.
I know. As I said, what I presented here for the single chain problem was the most naive estimate, and that is one of the complications, but there are others. Even in the model where bridges do not exist, we still don't understand whether there is or there is no any kind of freezing. So I don't know what to do about bridges. Yeah, I'm aware of that.
And that demixing actually has a positive feedback because then you demix the stuff that stays outside and excluded from the condensed space produces that moist component to the condensing. And I wonder whether it's
Okay. This effect, of course, is taken into account, and I'm looking for the transparency where it is shown. Anyway, of course, this effect is honestly taken into account, because we have equilibrium with respect to demixing. We have concentration of both components of the solvent inside and both components of the solvent outside. We write that chemical potential of one, both chemical potentials are continuous, and of course one of the main reasons why this happens to be first order phase transition is redistribution of the solvent components. That is absolutely true, and that is seen in the equations and in everything. By the way, there is the redistribution of salts too.
Yeah, sure.
Governed by the same equation. So it's that is all there. Don't worry.
I have a question to your last part. Certainly must be two limits. When your spread of this W is going to infinity, that will be probably free society.
Right.
W going to zero, you will have a Pol Pot limit or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
And, in between, if you write, if you calculate just the correlation function for your I in some intermediate region, how does it look like? Does it have some oscillations or what is it?
In the approximation which we use, it doesn't have oscillations. I don't know how it looks in reality, because we didn't do any simulation or anything like that, I think.
Because you didn't have really a lattice where they are centered.
Right, we don't have lattice.
The bi-wall effect.
Right, yeah, right.
Okay.
But in some sense, is it true or not that the experiments, and then by the same token, the theory you would use for them, is taking place in a fairly dilute regime? I mean, there's a lot of solvent there, or...
That is true. It's very far from densely packed situation with respect to... Although, of course, it's almost densely packed, including water.
Yeah.
But, sure. Water. Yeah, then it's fairly dilute.
Normal charge oscillations are not things you would expect.
Right,
yeah. You might then get, as Tanaka sees, is long-range density waves.
Right.
In the gel.
Right. Right. That is precisely what I expect. Although experimentally, the state of the art of experiment is shown by those figures. What is measured and what is measurable currently is simply the size. In order to see these waves, you need more. There are some experiments in progress, but they are in progress and they are in the unshown part of my pile of transparency.
I'd like to ask you about the heterogeneity of these gels, how turbid they are. It seems like your picture gives a way of predicting how much unevenness of the density to expect.
Right, and
in polyacrylate, you can really have huge variability in density.
Right.
Do these gels experimentally look real turbid, or are they just more?
It is, I think the honest answer to this question would be that it is not completely understood from experimental point of view, because the turbidity or just the outlook of the gels seems to be dependent in some strange way on some poorly controlled factors of their preparation. For instance, relaxation times involved in these gels are sometimes hours, or depending on the size of the gel, it may be sometimes a day. But the current situation is such that the gel is considered good if it's transparent. And they more or less look transparent on the scale. They are micron size or something like that, and they look more or less transparent. So how does it go with respect to expected scattering from this picture? That is not yet known and not yet understood.
On the other hand, there are, as if I read the phase diagrams correctly, there are upper and lower critical points. And in that vicinity, you would just expect some critical turbidity, again, whether it's intense enough to be seen.
That is certainly the case. But on the other hand, please keep in mind that this picture includes all the points known to the to the humankind.
That's right.
And so the question of the vicinity of critical point is certainly premature.
Is a theory. So if you want to see the turbulence, you can go to the ends of the blue blob there, and there should always be some turbidity relative to...
Also, please keep in mind that the size of those points more or less reflect the experimental accuracy. So it's...
Thank you.